if I go quiet, so I can adjust my volume. Difficult to start shouting, what feels like shouting when you've been sitting quietly all day. And I'd like this evening to continue exploring this notion that we started off with this morning of viveka, the Pali word viveka meaning to withdraw from the busyness of the world as a skillful means, as a way of gathering our mental and emotional and bodily experiences into a sense of awareness, a sense of presence. This notion of viveka also means to relinquish the grief or the hankering or the longing for the world, the disappointments of the world, to be able to have times of putting down our activity, putting down our longing, putting down our desires, putting down our disappointments for the sake of gathering into this present moment. This is one of the foundation skills of the path of awakening. And in that process, allowing ourselves to become more realistic, be in tune more with the reality of what is actually here and now, rather than our assumptions and our interpretation of the appearance of things in ways that leads us to dislocation or disorientation. So this practice of being present is really to learn to be in touch with what appears to us in each moment, the skill of paying attention more carefully. For example, when we notice body, we start with body. Body is very much something we include in our meditative experience rather than dislocating from the sense of body and going into some ephemeral realm of the mind. We include and directly begin to make contact with the experience of what is it to be embodied? What is it to have a body? What does it feel like? Often, when we think about the body, the form of the body, it gives rise to all sorts of various perceptions. We often have ways of thinking about ourselves or defining ourselves according to how the body looks, the appearance of the body, the age of it, how it appears to ourselves in the mirror, how it appears to others, the shape of it, whether we consider it attractive or not. And quite unconsciously, often our sense of well-being, our sense of reference can depend a lot on just how the body appears. And as we know, this is a multi-million dollar industry to get a sense of well-being by shaping the external form of the body in such a way that it appears pleasing to ourselves and to others. It's also very stressful. It also tends to, when we consider ourselves, when we shape a sense or have perceptions about ourselves, according to how the form of the body is, it tends to lead to mind states that are discontent or infatuated or fascinated or critical, that are sometimes fearful. Oh, my body is aging. It's not looking the way I feel it should look. Now, this is a very powerful way that the mind can be dominated by the perception just of the physical appearance. And if it wasn't the case, then we wouldn't really have such an industry around it. So in the meditative way, we begin to actually directly connect what is the experience. Usually we have these projections onto the body, but we don't really experience it. We experience it through a perceptual framework, through a like or a dislike, or through a criticism, or through a judgment. we don't really come into contact with how the body is in a kindly or compassionate or more real way. And so the first activity of Viveka is to withdraw from the external perceptions and interpretations and projections onto the physical form, the kaya viveka, the viveka of the body, and allow the body to be in a safe and a peaceful environment like this, for example, so that the bodily form can relax. It's not being impinged upon also by the expectations of others, projections of others. And we can allow ourselves gently to come into contact. How is this form that we live with all the time? Can we receive it in a different way? Can we experience it in a different way through attention in a more real way? When we think about the body, then we tend to go into worry or anxiety. When we feel and in direct contact with this moment, then it alleviates those tendencies of mind to go into states of anxiety or states of discontent. And then more subtly, the rupa, called rupa, is the internal aspect of body. How we tend to generate or create a sense of self around how we feel the internal aspect, the feeling tone, the flow, the sensations, the elemental experience, actually in some ways the internal experience of body as we meditate and bring attention, is quite elemental. There's warmth, there's flow, there's wind, there's a sense of solidity, there's a sense of spaciousness, liquidity. There's also a feeling tone, ways that we feel. And again, the tendency to interpret feeling, particularly based on certain perceptions that we have. In meditation, we notice that perception and memory comes up, and along with that, the feeling tone, and the tendency sometimes to interpret that as a self. For example, if we have memory come up, or we think about, we have perception of childhood, or perception of being in school, or perception of first falling in love, or perception of a conflicted relationship, it will often bring up a sort of a resonant feeling tone in the mind as well, the corresponding feeling. And in some ways, the perception that we have is just a little cutout from a whole flow of events. But the way memory works, it's very selective. It tends to pick a little piece of what happened in the past, and around that we create a sense of self, either a sense of self if it's something good, a good memory that feels inflated or good, or if it's a difficult memory, we might feel depressed, we might lose self-confidence, we might feel worthless. And so we can start to see how the actual realm of perception is a very fragile and fleeting realm upon which to find a sense of well-being and solidity. And particularly when it generates a feeling in the heart or mind, and the strong tendency to negate difficult feeling and to want to try and find that which is pleasing to us or comfortable for us. So in the meditation, again, at a more subtle level, we start to just notice that actually, these are like frames, they're not whole pictures, they're perspectives that are also fleeting, that are also changing. They're just, say, in this feeling around which I might have generated a sense of self or a sense of me, we could actually say from the meditative point of view, it's pressure or it's discomfort or it's tingling or it's moving or it's heavy. When we really start to notice in this moment exactly what is the perceptual framework. The perception is quite powerful. Memory is quite powerful. Not only has a power, but it has a certain resonance into the energetic experience of the body. Certain layering that starts to happen from the accumulated habits and memories that we have from a lifetime. And so when we sit sometimes and we have these accumulated perceptions and feeling tones about ourselves that we experience as rupa, as energetic flow and flux, then sometimes it can feel quite heavy or quite constricted, quite layered. And not only perception about ourselves, but also perception of others. Can be very powerful. You are like this, or I'm like so and so. You might see me and have different perceptions, but do you really know me? And do I really know you? I see you on a retreat. It's quite common for us to see each other and quite quickly come to certain conclusions. This one's like this, and that one's like that. And how based is it in reality? How based is it in truth? Do we really know? And often the mind is conditioned, or the perceptual framework of the mind is conditioned to see through our own particular viewpoints, through our own quick assumptions, not really according to reality. And so sometimes we can get to the place where we don't see reality at all, we're just seeing the projection, the mind projecting its own view, either onto itself, either in creating a sense of self. I'm like this, I have this difficult feeling, this heavy feeling, therefore we interpret as something wrong with me, I'm not very good. We have a difficult meditation, we interpret as I'm not doing very well as a meditator. We have a good meditation, we're peaceful, then we interpret it as I'm doing well, I'm a good meditator, I'm going somewhere. Or someone looks at us and doesn't smile, and we immediately think they're a miserable person, they don't like me. And so the tendency of the projective tendency of the mind itself is very powerful. For example, where we live in South Africa, for the Zulus, a frog is seen as something that's a bad omen. If you see a frog, it's a very bad omen. And so when one sees someone gardening, so we have a gardener, Zulu gardener, if he comes across a frog, he goes into immediate panic. Frog. Now that frog is just sitting there doing its own thing, and immediately the mind is going, that's horrible, that's yucky, that's bad, that's, you know, something negative is going to happen, it's a bad omen. The poor frog's just sitting there, just doing its own thing. And it's very bad news for a frog. And the mind is set in such a conditioned way. But, even worse than that, we can have those kinds of, again, in South Africa, we have those perceptual views racially. Whites are like this, blacks are like that. And then when we meet each other, we meet each other through our perceptions, through the views that the mind projects. It's very hard to meet someone, actually, beyond that. It's very hard to endure the discomfort, sometimes, of dismantling the perceptions that we have conditioned about each other through our various assumptions. Remember early on, when I first arrived in South Africa, I wasn't quite attuned to the subtleties of those formations and tendencies of mind. When in the rural area, the black community is mostly a labor force, the white community is mostly the employers. Certain kind of relationship already set in motion. And if you turn up as a white, there's a certain dynamic that automatically gets oscillated by the very fact of your racial appearance. And I remember once stopping on the road, black guy that needs a lift, and usually in that dynamic, black guy sits in the back and the white sits up front. And I wasn't very attuned to all of that. I didn't actually approve of all of that. And so I just opened the front door for the person to sit in next to me, thinking, you know, the person sitting in the car would have a chat on the way to town. And the level of discomfort, first of all, the person didn't want to sit in the front because there's a conditioning so strong, encouraging to sit in the front. The level of discomfort was so high. And I began to think, is this really worth it to challenge these perceptions and these views, to try and meet someone directly? So what we don't often realize is that a lot of the ways we frame the world through our perception and frame ourselves more intimately is really uninvestigated. It's really unnoticed. It just tends to condition ways of interpreting our experience through certain viewfinders, through certain perceptual frameworks. In the meditation, we begin to unpeel that and to really look from the state of the present. What is really here and now? And can we do that without interpreting what is here and now as a sense of self? I am doing well, I'm not doing well, I'm always like this, I'm always feeling exhausted and tired, or I'm always being negative, or I want to be peaceful. This accumulation of memory, perception, feeling, tone, as we experience it in the energetic body, has a sort of constricting effect on the natural state of the jitta that we were talking about earlier, the jitta being this spacious, aware, the heart in its natural, or the mind, heart, in its natural state. The jitta is the mind, heart, formless, spacious, luminous. Usually we don't notice that in its natural state because we're so obstructed by the way we consistently interpret feeling and movement, perception as a self. So the practice we've been doing today of anapanasati, mindfulness of the inhalation and the exhalation, the coming and going, is a way of beginning to get some perspective on these habits and tendencies to generate the sense of me resisting the moments of my experience or me trying to get somewhere. Me being shaped by what my experience is, and rather in the mindfulness practice really directly know what is here now, what can we actually notice. So the work of just simply being with breath, and being with the breathing, helps to disengage somewhat from this tendency to constrict around our experience, to resist our experience, and to come into another dimension of relationship to our experience, which is one of just noticing this is how it is. It's not thinking about, but it's just noticing this is how it is in this moment. So the breath, working with breath, has the aspect of focusing attention. But it also has the dimension of beginning to heal or cleanse our energetic experience from this tendency to be so layered, so heavily layered from the residue and the resonance and the ricochet effect of the perceptual framework that we've been operating within, the habitual tendencies that we are flooded by, with dullness or aversion or resistance or grasping, looking for something, or the subtle feelings we hold about ourselves. Feeling a bit depressed or not feeling good enough or feeling overly inflated in some way or another. So all the ways, any way we interpret ourselves is somehow a distortion of a direct relationship to what's present. In this practice of gathering, the anapanasati, the mindfulness with breath, we begin to allow the heart to be inducted or introduced into its own nature, the mind to be introduced into its own nature, which the Buddha called papasara, the papasara jitta, which means the heart, mind in and of itself is already papasara, meaning already radiant, already bright, already peaceful, already luminous, already spacious. There's nothing to add to it, there's nothing to diminish it. We just don't recognize, because of the settings of the jitta, the way the jitta's been conditioned or shaped. So although it sounds very simple, the practice of bringing attention begins to allow the calming, the gathering of the jitta's, the heart's own energy. The practice is simple. It's simple. Simply bringing attention, allowing the attention to be directed by the thoughts, rather than thinking in a very uninformed way. Allowing a thought to bring our attention to the present, gently to encourage the attention to open to what's here, coming here and now. And then receiving, being able to receive our present experience, receiving in this case the breath, today we've been working with breath energy, very accurately beginning to receive, in fact there isn't the breath, there isn't a breath as such, there is the flow, there's a flow, an energetic flow that we begin to allow the attention, which is usually shaped and dispersed by the habits of our perceptual framework, the habits of looking for something, the habits of moving away from what's here. We allow that attention to settle very simply with that flow. And what it begins to do as that happens, we can perhaps begin to notice that within that process, when the mind's energy gathers around something very simple, like body breathing, breath within body, we can notice there's something very pleasant in that, something very pleasing. The Buddha called it piti, which means, the word piti means to feel a sense of savoring, of fullness. Usually we're looking through our senses to savor something, to give us some kind of sensation, some stimulation, but in this way we learn to savor what we usually have projected on, the body, breath, compound, all sorts of ideas and reactivity. We learn to feel connected with, feel the flow of breath within body and to savor that experience, as if we were savoring a meal or something, or a delicious taste. And even with in unpleasant sensation, if we stay long enough, even with something that feels constricted or tight, as we bring our attention into the present moment, then gradually the seed of this piti, which means to be filled with a certain kind of pleasure that arises from meditation, the seeds will be there, because it's the very nature of attention. Once it starts to stabilize, that it generates in and of itself a sense of fullness, a sense of pleasure, the pleasure born of the mind's own gatheredness, the heart's own gatheredness, rather than the pleasure that's so dependent upon the sensory stimulation. So this practice of samadhi is to really explore what is it to have well-being and pleasure not dependent upon external circumstance, but something that can be generated from within the mind and heart's energy itself. So the ability to bring attention in the moment is the skill that begins to allow us to explore, to stay connected with. It's not enough just to bring attention, we have to stay connected with, to be interested in. And as we do that, to perhaps get a sense for the energetic experience of the breath, body, starting to fill with its own attention, with awareness, with a sense of gatheredness. As this happens, then it's possible a little bit more to relax. These are called the jhana factors, the factors that bring about a state of absorption or gatheredness. There's no ability to have samadhi if there's not an ability to relax. If we're too willful, if we're too striving, or we're too dispersed, then we haven't got the right level of effort, effortless effort, to be present enough to really feel what it is to relax in each moment. So the fruit of meditation depends really on our ability to be present, to stabilize attention, but also to relax within our experience. And often what we're, our relationship to our experience is very reactive. We're very quick to react, hence one needs a lot of patience to stay with that which is uncomfortable, what appears to be uncomfortable, but often if we can stay with it enough, it can reveal underneath that the very seeds of our ability to feel a sense of fullness. So the relaxation, the non-resistance to the moment, to what's present, the bodily sensation, the flow of the breath, little by little encouraging this gathering around what's here and now. As this becomes more cultivated, and the Buddha calls it a state of ekakata, which means unified. Ekakata, which means a sense of the breath, heart, mental energy, body, is unified within this sphere of attention, within the sphere of awareness. Sense of everything coming together. The Buddha described it like this. Now what, monks, is the state of noble right concentration, samasamadhi? There is a case where a monk, quite withdrawn with viveka, withdrawing from sensuality, withdrawing from unskillful qualities, enters and remains in the first jhana. Rapture and pleasure, born from withdrawal, accompanied by vitaka viveka, here they translate it as directed thought, the thought that directs attention, vitaka. Viveka, they describe, the English translation, evaluation. It's not a very good translation. It's more like vichara. It's more like staying with. Vitaka vichara. He permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills his very body with the rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded by rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal. So this notion of the whole body being included in this practice of attention. And then he gives a simile. Just as if a skilled bathman or bathman's apprentice would pour bath powder into a brass basin and knead it together, sprinkling it again and again with water, so his ball of bath powder, saturated, moisture-laden, permeated within and without, would nevertheless not drip. Even so, the monk permeates his very body with the rapture and pleasure born of withdrawal. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded by this rapture and pleasure. This is the first development of the five-factored noble right concentration. So this simile, the bathman's apprentice, the notion of the brass bowl is really the notion of the jitta or the heart, that which contains everything, the awareness is like this brass bowl within which everything appears. The body appears, the breath appears, feeling appears, moments of attention all appear within this larger container, the container of awareness. And then the powder the notion of the powder that's all split apart, like soap suds that haven't got water in them. They're like disconnected with each other. They're dry flakes. This is the experience of the body that's not permeated with attention. When we first sit in meditation, we can feel that our body is like dry flakes, a bit lumpy here, a bit pressure there, a bit dislocated down here, numb. It doesn't feel comfortable. It's not pervaded with pleasure. It feels uncomfortable. So at first, in the brass bowl, in our awareness, is this experience of dry flakes, the body dismembered, split apart. And then adding the bathman's apprentice, that's why it's called a practice. Sometimes we think you should just sit and it should all happen, but this notion of developing skill and adding to this dried, lumpy mass, moments of the water that we add is moments of attention, the little drips of water that that begins to diffuse is the same simile of moments of attention that diffuses what feels disconnected, hard, dislocated, the sense of self, the thoughts that are dispersed, the body that's heavy. But it's the moments of attention that adds the water that begins to lubricate. And then this massaging, if you remember in the simile, the bathman is massaging with his hand the ball of powder with the water. And this is the inhalation and the exhalation. It's the massaging of the rhythm of the breath that allows attention to begin to permeate through this this heaviness of the body, constriction of the mind, of the heart, the jitta. And then this, until it's massaged, until the ball of dry flakes, massage with the breath, massage with the hands, until this body, massage with the breath, the moments of attention begins to formulate suds, like foam. And when you need powder, washing powder, it starts to turn into another substance. And it's this foam or this substance is called this energy of pleasure or rapture or well-being that can then permeate, or the word that they use, diffuse, to diffuse the whole being, jitta, the quality of mind-heart, the rupa, the energetic experience of body, and kaya, the external sense of body, to diffuse the whole body with this breath energy, with this pleasurable experience of being present. So this practice is moments of developing skill. It doesn't all necessarily happen at once, but moments of being able to bring attention, to notice the lumpy bits of the body, the distracted parts of the mind, the old memories that come up and haunt, the old feelings about ourselves where we may feel a bit depressed or a bit lost, the old ways that we describe ourselves, the world around us, but sometimes through a heavy veil, thickness. It's permeating all of that with this moments of attention, moments of mindfulness, moments of presence, using the breath energy. It's such a miracle, using the breath energy to steady the attention. And that very breath energy, as it breathes in, permeates the whole body. Feeling the inhalation permeating the whole body with energy, with flow, as we breathe out. On the exhalation, suffusing the whole of our form, the whole of our sense of our being, with this subtle energy of well-being, suffusion. And in this way, little by little, we can begin to have a foundation of well-being that's accessible always here and now. We can begin to know how to access a heart that's already peaceful, a heart that's already spacious, a heart that's able to contact the world according to its nature, contact our own experience as it is, moment by moment, without the need to interpret, without the need to project perceptions, without the need to move into criticism, into grasping, into rejection. And so this mindfulness of breath both has the aspect in it of healing, cleansing, calming, of gathering the mental, emotional, physical energies into awareness, but it also has within it the ability to stabilize enough attention so we can directly see each moment as it is, which is flickering.